Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. The health of the Columbia River and its largest tributary, the Snake River, was the focus of a discussion at the Barbee Maritime Center during the Fisher Poets Festival in Astoria. Brett Vandenhoevel of Columbia Riverkeeper and Sam Mace of Save Our Salmon talked about ways to stand up for the Columbia Basin as the rivers face threats from fossil fuel export, dams, and warming temperatures. What follows is an edited version of that longer presentation. You'll hear some noise in the background because another event was in progress at the other end of the Barbee Center. You'll also hear a bit of music at the beginning and end of today's program from an event featuring river songs and poems recorded later that day at the Columbian Theater. And there's also a bit of poetry from Native American Ed Edmo, who was born at Celilo Falls on the Columbia before it was inundated by the Dalles Dam. Songwriter Mary Garvey joined with the musicians on stage as they sang her song about the Astoria Bar and rowing all night from Willapa Bay.
But the river still shines and shimmers in the light as it did in our grandfather's day. When we rowed all night and fished in the morning and lived in Willapa Bay.
The estuary, as most of you know, is the one of the most important ecosystems on Earth. The Columbia used to have was the greatest fishery on Earth, and it still has a lot of potential. You know, it has changed from a wild and free-flowing river to a dammed river. There's a lot of concerns with it, but it's still our home. We still have a lot of ability to restore and bring back more salmon. And here, they call it the linchpin of salmon recovery. You know, every single salmon in the entire Columbia Basin, this is the nursery for it right out here and upstream in some of these islands. So it's an area that's worth protecting. There are a big proposal in Vancouver, Washington, to ship oil on trains. It'd be the nation's largest, and put it on ships in Vancouver, and they would sail down through the estuary here. We've never exported oil from the U.S. in any large scale. We've never had super tankers of oil sailing down the Columbia River. There's going to be a yes or no decision on this project this year by Governor Jay Inslee, and it's something that we think is a big threat to the river. An Exxon Valdez type spill on the Columbia at the wrong time of year, the wrong spot, could be absolutely devastating for so much that we've worked for. And there's two big ones on this map that are remaining: the Millennium Coal Terminal in Longview, and Tesoro Savage is that giant oil terminal that I mentioned in Vancouver. There's also something that's actually newer than this map, a methanol refinery, which would take natural gas and turn it into a chemical called methanol and ship it to China to make plastics.
Don't be dogmatic. This is a lesson that's taken a lot of us hard to learn. My opinion on some of these environmental issues is that it takes a lot of different tactics. Columbia Riverkeeper does a lot of community organizing. We do a lot of legal work. We don't, as an organization, do direct action type stuff. I think there is a place for nonviolent direct action. I think it's really important. It's not one of our tactics, but there seems to be, people have their different opinions on what works and what doesn't work. And I think we need to, there's so much work to be done right now that we can't be too dogmatic. One of the biggest problems on the Columbia River is how hot the Columbia gets and the dams, obviously. I was talking to Jack Rinkovich, who's been fishing down here for many, many years. About a couple years ago, the sockeye run, we lost over half the sockeye run because the river was too hot. It was, the fish literally, it was the first time pollution has ever turned a run of salmon around. They got up to the McNary Dam in the Columbia River Gorge by Umatilla, and they literally turned around and came back to cold water tributaries and died. They were swimming around in circles with these nasty lesions on it. I saw thousands of fish die. The salmon need cold water, and it was too hot for their survival. The Columbia regularly gets about 75 degrees. The Snake River that Sam's going to talk about gets even hotter. And this is sort of an unseen killer, and it's a problem that nobody is addressing very well. Save Wild Salmon has been doing great work to try to look at some of the Snake River dam issues. Yesterday, a riverkeeper filed a lawsuit against EPA and Scott Pruitt to try to address the deficit. We didn't know it at the time, but it was the first lawsuit against the EPA Administrator Pruitt, the nation's first lawsuit, so that's a pretty cool little badge of honor. But one of the solutions to temperature is the Snake River dams, and Sam has been working on this for a decade plus, and 18, almost, who's counting? But Sam Mays from Save Wild Salmon.
When the salmon runs in the Columbia and Snake were getting listed under the Endangered Species Act. And we are formed with commercial fishermen, sport fishing businesses and groups, conservation organizations, taxpayer advocates, and others who all came together to work on the impacts of the hydro system on our fish. Next slide. And since 1997, after looking at the economics and the science, we endorsed dam removal as the single best action we could take to restore salmon and steelhead to healthy, harvestable numbers in the Columbia Snake Rivers. And kind of what I want to talk about today is bring a little bit, you know, speaking about the biggest tributary of the Columbia and the connections between Astoria and the communities here on the coast with our communities over in the Northwest, and the value and need that we have right now to be having some more cross-cascades conversations happening between the various stakeholders in the region. And we, right now, are at this unique moment where we have a real opportunity in the next 5 years to get these four dams taken out and have, you know, a better situation and economy for the fishing communities over here, as well as the communities that I work with and live near over there, the farming communities. And then I want to focus here on the Snake River Basin and why there is so much focus on the Snake River Basin. It is the biggest chunk of intact salmon habitat left in the lower 48. Millions of acres of land and wilderness, more than 5,500 miles of pristine river habitat that does not need to be restored. It is excellent habitat for the most part. But because of the number of dams that we built on the system, the salmon and steelhead can no longer get up there in healthy numbers, self-sustaining numbers. And in that blue area, you have the famous Salmon River, you know, the Grand Rock River, the beautiful streams there in northeast Oregon. You know, it's incredible habitat. And unfortunately, these four dams were kind of the last of the dam building era. They were built between 1960 and 75. Not for energy protection, but for creating barge traffic from Lewiston, Idaho to ship goods down. And what happened then, even back then, people knew what was going to happen to the fish. You can't really read that, but that's a quote from Department of Fish and Game back in 1949.
What was the quote?
Just saying that, you know, this is not a good idea. It's going to kill our fisheries, and this is going to hurt our jobs. And what we saw happen, that's exactly what happened over the years. There was a big fight to try to stop Ice Harbor, the first dam, and then a huge fight to try to stop the last dam that was built in 75 on Lower Granite. And the upside was that a whole bunch of other dams planned up the system no longer happened, but Lower Granite didn't go in. And we started to see our runs decline. Next slide. And we lost a lot. Not only did we lose salmon and steelhead, but in eastern Washington, we lost 140 miles of free-flowing river, you know, 1,400 acres of land, you know, river bars, islands inundated, many farm towns and agricultural lands were drowned out, and of course, what happened to our salmon runs. And then that's Snake River Sockeye, which Brent mentioned, they've been doing really decimated. We had one comeback one year in the early 90s. And while people were promoting, the runs are getting a little better because of the hot water temperatures, which Brent mentioned, we lost 99% of the run in 2015. 4,500 entered the mouth of the Columbia here, 45 made it back to Redfish Lake. Last year, we had a much better year, but we only lost 35% of the run. We kept expecting the Corps to come out with a press release that said, we have a 65% improvement on sockeye runs this year, but it's been bleak. Now I kind of just want to talk about what's happening right now and why we have an opportunity to change this around. We've been in litigation for 20 years. Three different judges have shot down five different failed salmon plans for being illegal and ineffective. And this last round was in May, and Judge Simon threw the plan out again and strongly urged the federal agencies to quit dragging their feet and to include and analyze dam removal as probably the best option both economically and biologically for our fish. And so what we're in right now is he told them to go back to square one, come up with a new environmental impact statement and a new plan, and gave them 5 years to do it. At the time, we were really disappointed he was giving them 5 years when they had 20, 25. However, with the current administration, we're glad our decision point is outside the current presidential administration. So the decision won't be made until 5 years from now. But this is our window that we have right now, these next 2 years, where I think the conversations between fishermen and farmers and other stakeholders is going to be really important. And this is a time where citizens can really make a difference in getting us to a point where dam removal is the chosen alternative. It becomes the final plan for saving our salmon. We just finished up a scoping process and public comment period. Almost 400,000 people commented and said take the dams out from a whole range of different stakeholders. There was a hearing here in Astoria, maybe some of you all went to it. It was a very disappointing process. They completely ignored commercial fishing interests and the economics of the fishing as in their presentations and in their materials. But nonetheless, it was great that so many different stakeholders turned out and told them to take the dams out. Right now, so they're going back to the drawing board with that. They're going to develop a new EIS. That EIS, draft EIS, is they're supposed to have that out by March 2020, and the final EIS in 2021. So we have a lot of work to do here in the interim to really make our argument that we can remove those dams and meet our transportation energy needs and benefit from having these restored fisheries back. And so what I want to kind of talk about a bit, though, is why, for those of you who've been around this issue and come close to having dam removal chosen in the past and then just didn't quite get it. And I kind of want to talk about why things are different this time and why I personally see a light at the end of the tunnel and an opportunity here to get these dams out. There's a lot of things that have changed in the conversation happening and in the information we know of why these dams are having such an impact, and also changes in the economics of these dams. Next slide. One issue that's really changed the conversation is more of an understanding of the value and importance of Columbia snake stocks to the resident orcas up in Puget Sound, which are on the endangered species list, and there have been many deaths of orcas in the last year and a half. The population's doing really bad. They come down to feed at the mouth of the Columbia at a critical time in March, and they really need those fish there for survival. They're not getting the fish they need, and we're seeing some huge, major declines in the population. So the whale scientists and the orca advocates are now very much engaged in the effort to call for removal of those dams. That's a whole constituency that really hasn't been there before, and they're making a difference with the Washington state legislators on this issue. And Brett already touched on that. I think another major key issue that's changing the conversation is the threat of climate change. right? We're having these huge fish kills. The temperatures are rising. This, you can't really see this, but we started tracking every week, and Columbia River Keeper was also involved with that, of sending out the temperature numbers on the river in the summer so that elected officials and journalists and citizens can see the temperatures that the water's hitting behind these dams. It is becoming ever more lethal, and especially under the Lower Snake dams, because the Lower Snake comes through desert land, it gets very hot. And so it's become a really lethal corridor for the salmon traveling up and down the Columbia to the ocean. The positive thing, however, is that in a warming world, fishery scientists are also saying that while they're most in danger if we do nothing with these dams, our fish are in real danger of going extinct. If we give them an easier pathway up to this amazing habitat, they're some of the populations of salmon that have the best shot of surviving and thriving in a warming world. This is high elevation habitat. It's very intact. It's in the wilderness. It's very pristine. The fish just can't get there. But if we give them that shot, the scientists say we can have abundant, healthy runs of salmon up in these areas where there's other lower elevation streams where unfortunately we may lose fish unless we turn stuff around. Another key game changer on the Snake River dams, of course, is all the successful dam removals happening around the country and here in the Northwest. The removal of the Elbaugh dams in particular really changed the conversation in Washington State. You had a community come together and decide this dam doesn't make sense for our community, our economy, or our salmon. Let's take it out. And it wasn't that quick. You know, it took a couple decades. But we're seeing this happen. You know, Condit Dam, dams on the Rogue River, the Sandy. And people are seeing fish come back in numbers they didn't expect. And they're also seeing these communities and economies around these dams thrive. And it's really changed the conversation in Eastern Washington, too. And then, of course, we have the whole conversation on the four Klamath dams and really hoping those four dams come out. And taking out such large dams is also going to further the conversation on the snake. And then the other key issue that's really changing the conversation in Eastern Washington and elsewhere is the changing economics of these dams. The benefits those dams are providing are in free fall and steep decline, and meanwhile, the cost of keeping those dams is rising. And one of the big ones is that, you know, as I said, these dams were built for barging. We have seen barging decline nearly 70% in the last 20 years. It's for a variety of reasons. You know, ask me in the Q&A if you're interested, but we're seeing farmers and growers put their investment dollars into rail and other measures, and they're leaving the river. Or they're building rail infrastructure, the ports on the river, that have nothing to do with barging up and down the river. They're using the ports in other ways. Is there a way to, you know, take some of this money we're spending on these four dams and invest that into the rail infrastructure that you need for the future? And there are some folks willing to start having that conversation. You know, the waterway is costing us hundreds of millions of dollars. That cost is going up. Why don't we invest that in a better way that both helps the farmers and is better for our salmon? And then it's increasingly becoming clear that we do not need the energy for these dams. We have so much wind and solar coming on. We have investments in efficiency and conservation, which is where we're going to be getting most of our power. And the fact is we have an energy surplus here in the region. There have been, you know, springs where they are shutting down the wind farms in the gorge because there's too much power on the grid. So what we're calling for is the kind of grid investments and upgrades that we need anyway to better handle that renewables and to take out these money-losing dams that are only providing at most 2-4% of our region's power. And at a time of year, the spring, when we really don't need it. There's also, I think, a growing recognition of the economic benefits that dam removal would bring. And of course, huge ones are all the salmon that would be, you know, swimming right past this community here, the benefits to the commercial fishing and other fishing-dependent communities. But also in Eastern Washington, we would now have 1,400 acres no longer underwater. it's great, like, recreation opportunities. Perhaps there's a role there for agriculture to bring back some of the communities that we lost. And, you know, there's a Earth Economics came out and said, you know, they took a look at it and said it would be a $1.4 billion bump to the community. I'd be happy if it was half that. And so one of the things that I wanted to chat with people about is, especially here in Astoria, is that, you know, a number of years ago when we had a shot at having a real conversation on these dams, one of the things that was really helpful is having some cross conversations happening between commercial fishermen and folks over here on this coast with farmers and growers in eastern Washington. It's easy when you live 500 miles away to blame the demise of salmon on, oh, those people downstream, right? And you hear a lot of that. You know, I've had a farmer say, well, aren't some jobs just supposed to go away? And he wasn't a bad guy, right? But, you know, kind of end up having a conversation saying, well, how do you feel when someone says that to you? You know, isn't there a way here to have your needs protected and our farms thriving, but also make room for the people who make their living downstream on the salmon steelhead that are very affected? And there were some really great conversations happening. We ended up having kind of kitchen table conversations with about 80 growers and shippers around the region, and it culminated in a great day-long conversation at Washington State University. And there was one person fishing rep from Astoria who came over and participated in that and had a really great conversation, you know, some good conversations with folks, and it changed people's opinions. You know, and one thing we also did is one farmer I know, wheat farmer I know, came over and went fishing a couple times over here. Went reef net fishing up near the Fraser and then went out trolling off Washington. And he came back and said, wow, those fishermen work so hard. Like, I don't work close to that hard, you know. And he kind of had a new perspective on the situation down here and the value of the industry over here. I think this is a really important time in these next 2 years to start having more of that dialogue happening. And so I just want to invite and throw that out there to fishing folks. If you want to come over and have a conversation or come and just talk about the stake that you have in this whole system over here in eastern Washington, I highly recommend it and would love to help facilitate that. We are going to have probably a couple different events happening kind of with that sort of goal in mind. And then the other thing that's happening that's not about the farmers, but it's about the tribes, is the Nez Perce tribe right now is building a traditional canoe that they are in the works of building. They just selected the log, and they want to do a canoe journey down to Astoria this summer and meet with folks along the way and invite people to canoe with them. I just want to give a heads up to that. I'm not sure yet when they'll land here, but that might be a really great opportunity for some conversation also. You know, there's a way to do this to get these dams out that doesn't hurt any other industries. It doesn't have to be done on the backs of others. And I think it's really important right now for fishermen and commercials to really speak out. You know, what's happening right now is we're seeing Northwest River Partners and the industry folks go around and talk at the luncheons in Boise and blame it all on the fishing communities down here for why the salmon and steelhead are in decline, and that's just not true. Terry Flores, who's head of Northwest River Partners, said, you know, almost verbatim, you know, we've been dealing with the industry and the dams. Too much is being expected of us. Recovery's all on our backs, and these fishermen are getting off scot-free. And so one thing we really, really want to do is push back on that.
I'm Ed Edmo. I was raised at Tulalip Falls, Indian Fisher Village, with no electricity, no running water. When the cold winter wind, was blowing down from eastern Oregon through the Columbia River Gorge, I'd be covered with many quilts made by loving hands, by mom, aunties, and grandma. There'd be the crackling of the fire wood stove. My father would tell me stories. I thought I was getting started. I didn't realize I'm giving culture handed down from generation to generation. Shalala fishermen. You made your nets and tested the knots, seeing that they held. Little did you know what was to hold you after the sound of water falling over what used to be. There's been something, it's disappeared. There's been something. Sometimes it is a song, sometimes a whisper. Sometimes it appears to be an animal, other times, weeping, I hear it. There's been something that had disappeared from my mother earth. I'm not sure what it was, but sometimes at night, I can hear it in the wind, or it comes to me in my dreams, like the smell of salmon cooking. Indian education blues. I sit in crowded classrooms and learn how to read about Dick, Jane, and Spot. I remember how to get a deer. I remember how to beadwork. I remember how to fish. I remember the stories told by the old, but Spot keeps showing up, and my pork heart is bad.
You've been listening to The Human Beat on Coast Community Radio. I'm Roger Rocca. Please join us again on the second Monday of next month at this same time.
Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning our darkness to dawn. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Someone asked me if I'd sing this song, which was written by Woody Guthrie back in the year 1941. He wrote it for the Bonneville Power Administration. He got a job for them working as a research assistant. It was the only way they could figure out how to hire him to make up songs for them. Green Douglas firs where the waters cut through. Down her wild mountains and canyons she flew. Canadian northwest to the ocean so blue. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Y'all sing it. Yakima, Snake, and the Klickitat, too. Sandy, Willamette, and the Hood River, too. So roll on, Columbia, roll on. Thing.